Chapter 4. Racing Day. 4 days later, Holmes and I were again in the train. We were bound for Winchester to see the race for the Wessex Cup. Colonel Ross met us by appointment outside the station.
"I have seen nothing of my horse," he said.
"Would you know him when you saw him?" asked Holmes. The colonel was very angry.
"I have been on the horse track for 20 years, and never was asked such a question as that before," he said. "A child would know Silver Blaze, with his white forehead and coloring of his left front leg."
Entering the grandstand at the track, I glanced at the card to see the names of the horses. Mr. Heath Newton's The Negro, red cap, brown jacket. Colonel Wardlaw's Boxer, pink cap, blue and black jacket. Lord Backwater's Desborough, yellow cap and sleeves. Colonel Ross's Silver Blaze, black cap, red jacket. Duke of Balmoral's Iris, yellow and black stripes. Lord Singleford's Rasper, purple cap, black sleeves.
"There are the names up," I cried. "They are all six there."
"All six there? Then my horse is running," cried the colonel with great surprise. "But I don't see him. My colors have not passed."
"Only five have passed. This must be he." As I spoke, a powerful bay horse swept out from the weighing station and passed by us. It bore on its back the well-known black and red of the colonel.
"That's not my horse," cried the owner. "That beast does not have a white hair on its body. What is this that you have done, Mr. Holmes?"
"Well, let us see how he gets on," said my friend calmly. For a few minutes he gazed through my field glass. "An excellent start," he cried suddenly. "There they are, coming around the curve." From our seats, we had an excellent view as they came up the straight. The six horses were close together, but halfway up, the yellow of the Mapleton stables showed to the front. Before they reached us, however, Desborough's sudden burst of speed ended. The colonel's horse, coming away with a rush, passed the post a good six lengths before its rival. The Duke of Balmoral's Iris made a bad third.
"My horse and rider won," said the colonel at the race's end. "I can make neither head nor tail of it. Don't you think that you have kept up your mystery long enough, Mr. Holmes?"
"Let us all go around and have a look at the horse together." We made our way into the weighing station, where only owners and their friends are allowed. "You have only to wash his face and his leg in wine, Colonel. Then you will find that he is the same old Silver Blaze as ever."
"My dear sir, I owe you 1,000 apologies for having doubted your ability. You have done me a great service by recovering my horse. You would do me a greater service still if you could lay your hands on the murderer of John Straker."
"I have done so," said Holmes quietly. The colonel and I stared at him in amazement.
"You have got him? Where is he, then?"
"He is here."
"Here? Where?"
"The murderer is standing immediately behind you." He stepped past the colonel and laid his hand on the neck of the horse.
"The horse?"
cried both the colonel and myself.
"Yes, the horse. However, it was done in self-defense. John Straker was a man who was entirely unworthy of your confidence, Colonel."
Holmes went on to explain the events which had occurred at the Dartmoor training stables on the Monday night and the means by which he had pieced them together.
"I confess," he said, "that I went to Devonshire with the conviction that Fitzroy Simpson was the true murderer. Then, it was while I was in the carriage, just as we reached the trainer's house, that the significance of the curried lamb occurred to me. You may remember that I was thinking, and remained sitting after you had all gotten down. I was wondering how I could possibly not have noticed so obvious a clue. Powdered opium is by no means tasteless. The flavor is not terrible, but it is distinct. In an ordinary dish, the eater would undoubtedly detect it. He or she would probably then eat no more. A curry was exactly the medium which would hide this taste. But how could Simpson have caused curry to be served in the trainer's family that night? Surely he didn't just happen to come along with powdered opium on the very night when a dish happened to be served which would hide the flavor. Therefore, Simpson can be removed from the case. Our attention centers on Straker and his wife, the only two people who could have chosen curried lamb for supper that night. The opium was added after the dish was set aside for the stable boy, for the others had the same for supper with no ill effects. Which of them, then, had access to that dish without the maid seeing them? Before we answer that question, let us consider the significance of the silence of the dog. The dog inside the stable had not barked enough to wake the two boys in the loft. Obviously, the visitor late that night was someone whom the dog knew. That was John Straker. Straker went down to the stables in the dead of the night and took out Silver Blaze. For what purpose? For a criminal one, obviously. Or why should he drug his own stable boy? The contents of his pockets helped me to form a conclusion. You cannot have forgotten the knife which was found in the dead man's hand. It was, as Dr. Watson told us, a knife which is used for the most delicate operations known in surgery. And it was to be used for a delicate operation that night. You must know, Colonel Ross, that it is possible to make a slight cut on the cord connecting the muscle and the bone of a horse's back leg. Such a cut beneath the skin, so as to leave no trace, would leave a horse slightly lame. Others would think it a strain from exercise or a joint problem. No one would suspect criminal activity.
"The dirty cheat!" cried the colonel.
That explains why John Straker wished to take the horse out onto the moor. The horse would have certainly woken the soundest of sleepers when it felt the cut of the knife. It was necessary to do it in the open air.
"I have been blind," cried the colonel. "Of course, that was why he needed the candle and struck the match."
"Undoubtedly, but in examining his belongings, I discovered not only the method of the crime, but even its motives. Recall the bill we saw. Men do not carry around the bills of others in their pockets. I at once concluded that Straker was leading a double life. The nature of the bill showed that there was a lady in the case, and one who had expensive tastes. I questioned Mrs. Straker as to the dress without her knowing it. Having satisfied myself that it had never reached her, I made a note of the designer's address. By calling there with Straker's photograph, I easily dismissed the mythical Derbyshire. Then all was plain. Straker had led out the horse to a hollow where his light would be invisible. Simpson, in his flight, had dropped his scarf, and Straker had picked it up. Maybe he had some idea to use it in securing the horse's leg. Once in the hollow, he had got behind the horse and had struck a light. The creature was frightened by the sudden light, as well with the strange natural feeling that animals have when some evil is intended. It had struck out with its feet. The steel shoe had struck Straker full on the forehead. He had already, in spite of the rain, taken off his coat in order to do his delicate task. As he fell, his knife sliced into his leg. Do I make it clear?"
"Wonderful!" cried the colonel. "Wonderful! You might have been there!"
"My final shot was, I confess, a long one. A man like Straker would not attempt this delicate operation without a little practice. What could he practice on?" My eyes fell on the sheep. I asked a question to the stable boy. Rather, to my surprise, I found that my guess was correct. When I returned to London, I called on the designer. She had recognized Straker as an excellent customer of the name of Derbyshire. She also told me of a very beautiful wife with a strong interest in expensive dresses. I have no doubt that this woman had sunk Straker heavily in debt. The debt led him into this miserable plot."
"You have explained all but one thing," cried the colonel. "Where was the horse?"
"Ah, it ran away and was cared for by one of your neighbors. I believe it is almost time for supper, colonel. Over the meal, I shall be happy to give you any other details which might interest you."